Welcome to the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery, where every death had a life and every life had a story. My name is Jenny Johnson.
Hello, and I'm Diane Hartshorn.
Diane, I was reading some articles the other day, and I don't even remember where I originally saw this article, but then I went back today and pulled it up so we could have it when we were recording. But I saw that the state of Maine is considering a bill to allow Viking funerals.
Oh.
I know. I thought that was cool. So then, of course, I had to go in and read it. And then I learned something about our own state of Colorado, because I didn't know this about Colorado. They are going to allow they call them a Viking funeral, but they're not Viking funerals with, you know, putting the body in the boat, pushing it down right. The river, lighting it on fire. That's not what they mean in this case, as cool as that would be.
Yeah, very cool.
I know my husband would prefer that. If that were an option, he'd take it. But it is another option for cremation. And really, it's for open air cremations, which according to, and I don't know exactly if this is the same way our Colorado law for it is written or not, the bill restricts the open air cremations to a fixed location, so it can't be moving on the water, that's operated by a nonprofit and with a three-sided structure built to withstand the 1500 degree heat that is required to cremate the body. So there wouldn't, I think what they mean is that there's no roof, and there's right. one side that's open. So you could essentially, I guess, have a ceremony.
Yeah. And they,
on that open side.
Shoot swords. Let swords.
There you go.
Not swords. Arrows.
There you go. Arrows. Goodness. Fly the arrows in there. Yeah. Well, at least, you know, if there's those side walls and a back wall, they're not going to go any further than that unless you have somebody who's
right
shooting to go over the walls, I guess. But hopefully not. I didn't realize that we had open air cremations in Colorado. I didn't know it was a thing we did here. I mean, we have cremations. I just didn't know about the open air policy. Apparently, we're the only state currently in the country that allows open air cremations. So Maine would be the second state to allow it.
Very cool.
I thought that was kind of cool. I didn't know it. Learn something new every day.
Definitely do.
So if anybody knows more about that and they want to let us know, or if anybody in Maine is following along and you want to let us know if that bill passes.
Definitely. How that's apparently working.
Yeah, this just came up. So I'd love to know if it passes and if people actually opt for these open air cremations. It'd be kind of cool. Before we get started, I wanted to give a quick shout out to the Association for Gravestone Studies, because a couple of times they have featured our podcast in their monthly newsletters. So we are very grateful every time they do that for us.
Thank you.
So thank you. We appreciate that. And we appreciate anybody who is a member who gets those newsletters and started listening because they saw it in there. We're grateful to all of you. So thank you. And also, before we get into the content of today's episode, two of the stories that we're going to share with you are very tragic stories. I apologize for that part in advance. I didn't plan that well when I started putting this one together. The first story, there is one particular injury that we discussed that's a little gruesome. So if you're squeamish, you might want to like fast forward just a little through that part. And the second story does deal with some extreme domestic violence. So if that is something that would bother you or make you very uncomfortable, you may either want to skip most of this episode and go to the happier parts, or at least skip that part of it if that's something that would upset you to listen to. So we just wanted to give you listeners a heads up that we will be discussing both of those issues in today's episode. Without any further ado from me, we'll go ahead and get started. So it is our goal to feature cemeteries from all over the country and around the world. So we try to vary the locations from episode to episode. Last week, we were in the southern U.S. by visiting the Indian Springs Cemetery at Indian Springs State Park in Butts County, Georgia. And this week, we have decided to feature a cemetery on the West Coast. So today, we will be visiting Lone Fir Cemetery in Portland, Oregon.
From coast to coast.
Coast to coast.
According to the Friends of Lone Fir Cemetery's Facebook page, in 1854, a J.B. Stevens sold his farm, located a few miles east of the small town of Portland, to Colburn Barrow. On the property was the grave of Stephen's father, Emmer, who died in 1846. Barrow agreed to maintain the gravesite. Colburn Barrow was a partner in a passenger steamship line between Portland and Oregon City. On April 8, 1854, the boiler of their steamship Gazelle exploded while moored near Oregon City. The accident killed several people. including Beryl's business partner, Crawford Dobbins, and a passenger. Beryl buried the victims near Stevens and set aside 10 acres as a cemetery. He named the cemetery Mount Crawford in honor of his friend, Crawford Dobbins.
By 1866, 20 more acres were added to the original cemetery. Burial plots sold for $10. Colburn thought the cemetery should be owned by the city of Portland and offered it to the city for $4,000. The city council turned down the offer, citing the location was too far from town. There were no bridges crossing the Willamette River, and the mule-powered Stark Street Ferry was slow. Coupled with muddy roads, a funeral procession would be a weary trip at best. The cemetery was eventually sold to Portland investors in 1866, and the name changed to Lone Fir Cemetery for the solitary tree standing on the site.
Today, Lone Fir Cemetery is a wooded landscape arboretum in the heart of Portland. More than 25,000 people are buried there. From the familiar Curry, Deckham, Hawthorne, Lane, Lovejoy, and McClay to the unknown. Decay, neglect, and poor record keeping in the early years had led to an estimated 10,000 unknown graves. A visit to Lone Fir Cemetery will reveal the region's rich history.
There are many, many stories buried in this cemetery. And the first story we are going to share is more about the explosion of the steamship Gazelle. On the morning of April 8, 1854, the ship had left Bar Wharf at 6:30 a.m. and was just entering Caneemaw when a terrible explosion rocked the Gazelle at 6:45. According to newspaper reports at the time, 20 people were killed and at least 30 were injured. Among those killed was the chief superintendent of the Willamette Falls Company, Mr. David Page. One newspaper article quoted, "Mr. David Page, chief superintendent of the company, had his head literally dashed to pieces and could not have been recognized by other means than his clothes." The same newspaper article also listed the following names of the others who lost their lives in the explosion, including David Woodhull,
John Bloomer,
Joseph Hunt,
Mr. Hatch,
John Daly,
John Clemens,
David Fuller,
Mr. Wadsworth,
Judge Birch,
James White,
John K. Miller,
J. M. Fudge,
Mr. Morgan,
Mr. Hill,
Daniel Lowe,
a Spaniard, name unknown.
There were also some victims who died later as a result of their injuries, including Crawford M. Dobbins, Mr. Blanchett, and Mr. Plant.
Others were pronounced as missing included Charles Nost, David McLean, and others whose names were not known.
Those who survived suffered burns, broken bones, and one man had to have a leg amputated.
An article in the Portland Oregonian on April 15, 1854 stated, "It seems to be the settled opinion of everybody that this melancholy accident, which caused the most intense anguish in the hearts of hundreds of our citizens and spread a gloom over the entire community, was attributed to the reckless carelessness or total incompetency of the engineer. We understand a committee have made an investigation."
And according to an article printed in the New York Times on May 25, 1854, the coroner's jury, which sat upon the bodies of the dead, declared in their verdict that the disaster resulted from the gross and inapplicable negligence of the first engineer, Moses Toner, in knowingly carrying more steam than was safe and neglecting to keep sufficient water in the boilers. They also said that Toner, though summoned to appear and testify before the jury, refused to do so and escaped from the territory and beyond the process of the coroner or any judicial authority.
Many of the victims of this horrible accident are buried in Lone Fir Cemetery, and their graves are still marked.
So yeah, I went and looked online, and you can still find some of them with their marked graves and headstones and everything, so you can go and see them. And we do have some pictures on the website and on our social media pages of those graves, if you're interested. Another story buried in Lone Fir is that of Charity Lamb, who was the first woman in Oregon to be convicted of murder. And to be clear, Oregon was still a territory at this time. Very little is known about Charity's early life, including when she was born. We do know that she was married to a man named Nathaniel Lamb and that together they had five children. And when I was researching this, it seems like she had an older daughter as well that was not his daughter, although some of the articles weren't super clear about that. So there may have been 6 children, there may have been 5 children. I wasn't entirely sure on that. On Saturday, May 13th, 1854, Charity struck her husband in the back of the head with an axe while he was eating his dinner. Their children were present at the table at the time.
At her trial, Charity claimed extreme wife abuse, which was not a defense that had been used in a court of law before. Charity's oldest children, a daughter and a son, testified on her behalf that their father was often violent with her. They reported that he often beat and kicked her. One of them even claimed that once hit her with a hammer when she was sick and unable to get out of bed. In her own defense, Charity claimed that her husband had tried to poison her and that when he wasn't beating her, he was threatening her. There were also several occasions when he would fire his gun in her direction.
Charity also told the court that several times during the week before she killed him, he told her of his plans to abandon the family, murder her, and then go to California. It is quite obvious that Charity was in fear of her life and possibly the lives of her children. Unfortunately for Charity, the newspapers of the time painted her as the bad wife. She was often referred to as a monster, inhumane, and cold-blooded. Sadly, there are many articles published as late as 1972 that claim that Nathaniel was a completely innocent man and that he made claims before he died of his injuries that Charity and the oldest daughter wanted him dead so that they could go to California with another man.
In the end, a jury of 12 men, women were not allowed to serve in juries in 1854, found Charity Lamb guilty of second-degree murder. They did seem to believe that Charity had been abused and that she was anxious and living in a state of fear. But because she was not in imminent danger at the moment, she put the axe at the back of her husband's head, they wouldn't allow a claim of self-defense. They did ask the judge to sentence her lightly, but the law mandated a life sentence. Charity was the first woman to be imprisoned at the all-male territory penitentiary in Portland. She spent the first 8 years of her sentence in the penitentiary and then transferred to Hawthorne's Insane Asylum in 1862. She spent the remainder of her life in the asylum, dying in 1879. She is buried in Lone Fir Cemetery, but her grave is no longer marked, as it was covered over with gravel in 1930, as were many others.
Yes, and I have a hunch, and I didn't go into great research on this, but I have a hunch being the time frame during the Depression, it was probably like a CCC project of some sort, and they were creating like a parking space. So I think they paved over or filled in with gravel the graves of maybe people from the asylum, as well as some other people that they considered less of people at the time, and covered them over with the gravel. Okay, so now that we have covered two very tragic stories, let's end this episode with something on a lighter note. We will conclude our episode with a sentimental article that was written by Helen M. Warren and published in the June 15th, 1922 edition of the Oregon Daily Journal.
Plea for old lone fir, that proper care be taken on the ground in which many an honored pioneer reposes. Portland, June 12th. To the editor of the journal, we are soon to entertain our beloved pioneers in our fair city of roses. And to them, we are pleased to bow humble acknowledgement for their gift to us of this, our Oregon. While we take these by the hand God has spared to us these many years, our thoughts go out to those sleeping somewhere in our city and unknown to most of our fold of Portland.
One of my Eastern friends on coming to our city said to me, "I always turn my head when I pass Lone Fir Cemetery, for I cannot look at it." When we take these strangers up our beautiful highway to the Vista House, so lovingly dedicated to our pioneers who gave us this very soil, we tread and preserved it for our coming. Doesn't it seem a farce when we follow them to their last resting place among the weeds and snakes of Lone Fir Cemetery? There are some of us who have labored faithfully and long to keep up this spot, but we need concentrated action to make it a beauty spot. Do we realize that the pioneer who opened to the public a portion of his farm for burial purposes was a defendant of Elder Brewster of the Mayflower Colony? we discover the connection of this family with the early history of our own country. It was one of this family, Joseph Burrell, who helped to equip Captain Gray and his good ship, the Columbia, which gave us our West and also helped to establish Yale College.
In Lone Fir Cemetery, there's an old elm tree that has a story full of sentiment and love for home. Colburn Burrell, a pioneer of 1849, visited his parents in Boston in about 1852. This old home place, which is still standing, was surrounded by elm trees planted by his forefathers in an early day. The sentimental connection with the elm tree is historic, for it was under an elm tree that Washington took charge of his army. Some of this family of Burrells escorted the father of our country into Boston after this ceremony and were with him in the war that followed. When Mr. Burrell returned to Portland from Boston, he took one of these elm trees so dear to him, brought it around Cape Horn and planted it at First and Main Streets, where he then resided. He purchased a part of the Murray donation claim and a part of the Stevens claim, on which was buried A. Stevens, who died in 1846, and was the father of James Stevens, to whom we owe large gifts to our schools. He agreed that the grave was not to be disturbed. After moving his family to his farm, he set aside a portion of this ground for burial purposes, where he expected finally to rest. He again took up this elm tree, placed it on the flatboat that did service as a ferry, and dragged it after him to Lone Fir Cemetery, where it now cast its shadow over the graves of his old friends, these pioneers.
In this place so vastly grown are the bodies of some 400 Civil War veterans and a number of Mexican as well as Spanish War veterans. Our pioneer volunteer firemen have a plot fairly well filled with the heroes of our early firefighters. There are senators, statesmen, governors of other days, the first mayor of East Portland, and the first editor of the Oregonian, Mr. Dreyer, buried there. Willamette and Harmony chapters of Masons have a plot in this old place, also the Oddfellows, in which numbers of their pioneer members are buried.
The strangers who have taken up their homes with us wish to make a playground of this old burial place, which has become a nuisance because of its forsaken state. Cannot we make of this place a beauty spot? Something to gladden the hearts of these, our pioneers, who are yet spared to us.
So I do find some inconsistencies in this story with the actual history that the friends of Lone Fir Cemetery have in their history. I'm going to guess what we have now is probably more accurate. Again, this article was written in 1922, and so it might be a little fanciful in places and doesn't quite jive with the whole there was only one fir tree in the cemetery, which is how it got its name. But it's still kind of a nice story. And what I really appreciated about it was somebody who really, even in 1922, was saying, hey, we need to take care of our cemeteries. Right. So that was the part I appreciated about this story. So even if some of the rest of that isn't entirely accurate, I thought it was still a great story to share. We are pleased to report that the Friends of Lone Fir Cemetery have answered that call and are working diligently to care for the grounds and the monuments of this ordinary, extraordinary cemetery. One of their newest undertakings is restoring Block 14, originally known as the Old Chinese Burial Ground. Originally, the burials were meant to be temporary. The dead were to be unburied after a certain amount of time, any remaining flesh removed, and the bones were to be sent back to China. However, for many, that never happened, and their bones still rest beneath the soil of Lone Fir Cemetery. Now, however, $4 million has been dedicated to building a cultural heritage garden on Block 14 to honor the dead whose names and stories have been forgotten. So we look forward to doing a follow-up episode on this memorial in the future.
Definitely. As always, we thank you very much for joining us today. If you have enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a positive review on Apple Podcasts or on our website, theordinaryextraordinarycemetery.com. This really does help our little podcast become more visible to others who may enjoy our content.
You can also visit us on social media. We love to hear from you, and we love when you share with us about the Ordinary Extraordinary Cemeteries that you love. That's also how sometimes we come up with episode ideas. So keep those coming for us. We are on Instagram and Facebook at Ordinary Extraordinary Cemetery and on Twitter at Ord Extra Sim. You can also email us at ordinaryextraordinarycemetery@gmail.com. You will also find all the resources that we used for today's research for the episode on our website in the show notes for this episode. And I also want to send a special thank you to everybody from Instagram and Facebook who volunteered to allow us to use their photos. Yes,
thank you.
We really appreciate it since neither of us had photos of this cemetery. So thank you very much for those of you who loaned your photos to us. So please, if you're not the photographer, please make sure you go take a look at them because they're gorgeous photos and they've done a terrific job. So thank you.
Thank you. Until we meet again.